From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of July 2019. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll hear about my visit to the Horse Progress Show days that took place over the weekend in Arthur, Illinois. And then we'll discuss what's been happening with the cash grain market, that with Amy Sage at the Andersons. Mark Russo will be here too, from Risk Pulse in Chicago, to take up the weather forecast. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers settled in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. July corn at 438.5, up 4.5 cents. December at 443.5, a penny and a half higher. And next year's July at 456 and a quarter, a half higher. July beans up 3 cents at 875 and a quarter. November at 897 and three quarters, 3 1/4 higher. And next year's January at 909.5, up 3 1/4 cents. The bean oil futures 42 cents higher at 2786. The bean meal at 304.20. Up 40 cents for the wheat. The July contract, 2.5 lower at 516 3/4. That's the soft red. The hard red at 442, up 3 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago. August contract, 106.15, down 85. The August feeder cattle for the day at 138.90, 75.5 cents higher on the afternoon. In July, in the lean hogs, down $2 and a nickel at $70.07. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at this marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, I got to say, I don't think the trade paid too much attention to my little trek across Iowa and the Dakotas over the weekend. What a variable crop. I thought, Kurt, that it might be in better condition in Iowa than it really is. There's still an awful lot of variability, and it's not just in the field, because that's not so variable, but from one field to the next, and just the lateness of the crop is fairly amazing. What happened in today's marketplace?
Well, the overnight trade was off to a firm start. The weather maps, both were in agreement, and we saw the 6 to 10 day and the 8 to 14 day show above normal temperatures and below normal precip. And that gave us some buying interest right out of the chute. During today's session, the market was able to retrieve a little bit. The maps flipped to maybe a little better chance of some rain. But when it comes down to it, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. That it's becoming the lateness of the crop, at least 50% of the crop, that's fairly late. And that's going to be a concern as we move forward. This afternoon's crop conditions report expected to improve 1 to 2% in the good to excellent category for corn and beans, both, but I think it's going to be more of a western growing region versus the eastern growing region. Last week they did expect improvement, and we came in unchanged from the previous week. But interesting to watch Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. I also had the opportunity to do a little traveling over the last few days, except I was quite a ways up in the air. Wasn't able to see a whole lot, but it looked like I saw more dirt than green, brown around. So looks like this crop's got some catching up to do. So weather's going to be real, real critical here as we move forward, Todd.
So were you crop scouting from the air in just central Illinois, or were you running on a farther flight?
I was from here to Florida, but I was in the aisle seat, so they got kind of annoyed me looking over and trying to look out the window to see what was going on below.
Oh, yeah, at this time of year, I bet they do know which ones are farmers and interested in the fields below on the airplanes. Hey, as you think about this marketplace at this point in time, and we do have a WASDE that's due out on Thursday of this week, do you expect many changes there from what USDA said in the acreage report, that is?
Well, yeah, there's two sets of numbers. There's the acreage estimate. They're going to incorporate those numbers, and there's going to be actual numbers that from Prevent Plant and so forth, as producers get those turned in here by, I believe, the July 15th. So for the most part, this report Thursday is going to be sort of a so-called crap shoot for say, and see what comes out of it. But from there on out, I think the trade's going to be focused on a little less yield and a lot less corn acres particularly. The other thing to watch would probably be some of these world numbers, particularly wheat. We're seeing some wheat harvest activity not only here in the U.S., but in Europe and Russia and so forth. And so far, these wheat yields seem to be better than expected for the most part here in the U.S. This afternoon's wheat harvest progress report is expected to be 45 to 50% complete as a nation. But we got a lot of moving parts in through here, a lot of market in front of us, and I think the volatility is going to remain high for the next 2 to 3 months.
How are the concerns or cautions running in the trade as it relates to the Chinese trade negotiations?
Well, I think the hog market took it fairly serious here. Hogs took it on the chin anywhere from 90 to 250 points lower, $2.50 lower. We're just not, you know, seeing these big sales come forward. When you look at the big picture, I think the trade's kind of wore out on this Chinese news. You know, it's kind of a repeat, and nothing's really getting accomplished. And I think they're kind of using this soybean purchases as hostage in through here to try to push through. It seems like they want everything taken off and get this trade going again. One point that was brought up in their request was, you know, why should they buy beans if they don't need beans? And that relates to the news item of African swine fever in their country and their hog herd being sharply reduced. And so they might not need the feed requirements that they needed anywhere from 6 months to a year ago.
And finally, are farmers feeling better about the crops they put in the ground, or are they still awfully concerned?
Depends what area. Like you said, it's wide variation. Seems like everybody's got some good-looking stuff, and they've got some stuff that's not even quite knee-high. It's already past the 4th of July. You know, guys elected to try to take the prevent plant. So there's just a lot of different opinions out there. But if a little heat on it here, and if we don't stay too hot and dry, hopefully it will look a little better here for them as we move forward.
Hey, Kurt, thanks so much.
Very good.
And, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Friday morning, I happened to make a trip south of Champaign and was passing through Arthur and noticed that the Horse Progress Days was taking place. I thought this looked like a pretty unique show. It's in Amish country, and I stopped by to see what it was all about. Virgil Yoder was there. He's the general coordinator for the Horse Progress Show. I asked him to tell me a little bit about it.
The latest and the greatest in horse farming. We have everybody from grass farmers to conventional horse farmers that farm several hundred acres. We have international guests from Africa, Germany, faraway countries that still farm with donkeys. We have some stuff for them. It's just something for everyone.
Wait, what's the difference between farming with horses and farming with donkeys?
Well, donkeys, you can't farm more than 10 acres because it's a small, your equipment is small. When you go with horses, you go with big, we use power units, diesels on mounted on gears, tillers, rototillers, up to 12, 15 foot rototillers, and they do 14 inches at a time with donkeys.
So the donkeys are just smaller than the draft horses that you're using.
And the donkeys are used overseas, third world countries. They have very, very crude equipment.
What's the most unique or different enterprising equipment unit out here that you think you've seen?
There's a 24-foot hay mower from Ohio. This is actually the second year. Last year at Clare, Michigan, they had one there as a prototype, and they are just selling the daylights out of them. $30-some thousand for this mower. Sickle mower, no conditioners, no crimpers. And it is the latest and greatest in organic grass farming.
So I think I've heard something about this already. Are the sickles out in front of the horses? Tell me what it looks like.
The sickles are out in front of the horses. There's a 10-foot sickle with 2 9-foot sections that fold up. Those fold down when you go to the field, drop them down, and you mow in front of the horses. The horses walk behind the mower.
How's that possible?
A lot of thought. The horses, the mower turns hydraulically. All the horses do is provide the forward motion for the mower. The driver has hydraulic foot controls. He turns the mower, everything.
So the horses literally are following the mower through the field in this case. Why is that such a big deal for this kind of farming?
This mower is geared toward organic grass farming, grass-fed, no grain, no GMO, none of that. So they mow mornings with the sickle mower, and that night we'll go out with a round baler or a big square baler, bale it up, wrap it, and that's the end of it. You lose no nutrients or next to no nutrients. If you want to call it cutting edge technology in the horse farming world.
Speaking of which, what is the biggest misnomer about farming with horses that the rest of agriculture doesn't quite get?
Horses, you feed them what you raise. And if you are into it, the horses reproduce. They pay for themselves. They produce manure. You use that for fertilizer. As most of us think we need to farm several hundred acres to make a living, we have a group of people making probably more money than we do farming 20 acres.
That was Virgil Yoder. He was the general coordinator for the Horse Farm Progress Show in Arthur, Illinois, that took place this last weekend. I wanted to learn more about this mower that he was discussing, the double sickle mower. It's imported into the United States by a company called I&J Manufacturing out of Gordonville, Pennsylvania. Jacob Blank was on site, and so was Carl Strohn. He's from ESM Manufacturing near Cologne, Germany. They're the company that makes the double sickle. I asked him to tell me the difference between it and a regular sickle bar.
So the sickle is a unique piece of equipment that only ESM is manufacturing on a worldwide scale. And we have got into touch with the people here on the Horse Progress Days about 6 or 7 years ago when Jake Blank knocked at our door because after a lot of hassles with other cutting systems, he found out that the double sickle would be the ideal piece of equipment for any kind of horse-driven mowers. And for that reason, he contacted us, and this was the initial contact for a very, very successful partnership. And in the meantime, we are the market leader in this kind of cutting equipment in the United States, similar to our activities in Europe.
What's the difference between a double sickle and a sickle bar?
The difference between a double sickle and a sickle bar is that both of the knife assemblies are working against each other like a sizzle. And this is the key functionality, which gives you the opportunity to work without clogging, which is most important if you work with horses. And secondary, which is also very important, the power requirement is very, very low. This means, for example, we are working with a 9-foot cutter, only with 2 horses in front, without any engine, with a ground-driven cart.
Jake, so you're the distributor here and also the manufacturer. Right. Tell me about the background of why that happened.
Well, this goes back to at Horse Progress Days it was in Ohio, and that would have been 7 years ago. And I was talking to a gentleman from, Mats Johannesson was his name, and he was from Europe. But I told him about my frustration with some of the mowers, sickle bar mowers I was using, trying to hook them up with ground drive power, and it just wasn't quite connecting. So I was talking to Mats Johannesson from Sweden, and he was telling me, yes, there is a company that's still building the, I knew the Busatis mower earlier, that was 35 years ago. Busatis mower was very popular in Europe, and I knew their claim of a very easy running mower, non-plugging. And it always intrigued me, but yet I kept hearing that they went out of business until Mats Johannesson gave me that information through Draft Horse Progress Days 7 years ago. And he went home, and then he called me up later and gave me the contact information. I got a hold of Steve here, and that's from there on. A year later, we had the first unit in the field then at Davis County.
Remember like it was yesterday.
Yeah. And that really intrigued the people. You saw these ground drive mowers going up, stopping right in the hay, and everybody expected, well, you have to back up so you can get out of the hay to get started again. And we just started right off, and everybody was, they just had their mouths open. You know? So that's that was the start of it. And then from there, we built the ground drive. We built with the motors, and then last year, these guys came out with this intriguing model. So, yeah.
That's Jacob Blank. He's with INJ Manufacturing out of Gordonville, Pennsylvania. He and Carl Strohn joined us from ESM out of Cologne, Germany, along with Virgil Yoder, who's the general coordinator for that horse progress show that took place in Arthur, Illinois over the weekend. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. We're joined by Amy Sage. She is with the Andersons. Hey, Amy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So tell me about basis levels in our area.
Yeah, so we continue to see strength really across the board, both corn and beans, and wheat, of course, here too, as we are in wheat harvest. We've seen improvement across the board, both old crop and new crop. So a couple different reasons. The obvious is that we've gotten off to a historically slow start and some pretty questionable conditions in a lot of areas for the 19 crop. So there's a lot of concern, especially in the eastern Corn Belt, over what is going to be available from a new crop perspective. So a lot of ethanol plants over there with concerns and trying to get ahead of the game and get as much corn bought as they possibly can. Of course, then to the west for us here in central Illinois, the river being flooded has brought some opportunities for basis internally here because we haven't been able to ship to the Gulf regularly. And so we're supplying some of the Gulf needs via rail, which has also helped basis improvement in corn locally. So and as bean basis has been historically wheat, week, we have seen it start to improve as well. Again, a lot to do with the conditions for the 2019 crop here to start off. So these concerns have brought some opportunities with basis, and so far we've continued the pattern of improvement. Now, we want to keep an eye on that as we get close to pollination and start making some decisions on corn, whether that be to hold off or whether we want to start taking advantage of some of these really good levels. And beans as well, we want to keep an eye on that because obviously we're still historically lower than what we typically are at this time. But trade negotiations with China will be key in that development as well.
And your thought process on pollination is that it'll take place when? At the end of July, early August?
All of the above, and probably then some. I think we're going to be really spread out just because of the sporadic planting in this area anyways. I mean, we've had corn planted from mid-May through mid-June here, and we did get some heat last week, which sped some stuff along a little bit, but I think we'll start seeing some pollination here probably in the next 7 to 10 days, and that's probably going to continue on through the middle of August. And so we will have a long forecast to trade, I think, from a pollination perspective, which it should also spread some risk out as well. But I would say that's what we want to be watching here, and obviously we're pushed back this year.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Amy Sage. She is with the Andersons. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here from Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Todd. As always, glad to be here.
It is a good day. I'm wondering whether conditions are changing very much across the Corn Belt.
Todd, as we look out ahead over the next couple of weeks, we are seeing indications of a fundamental change in the pattern across not only the Midwest, but across much of the central and eastern U.S. Beginning to see more kind of persistent northern-based ridging of high pressure. We've seen that at times over the past week or so. But as we look out into next week and even beyond, starting to see more persistence of this ridging of high pressure, meaning more above normal temperatures across much of the central and eastern U.S., with the most anomalous reading being positioned more in across the northern U.S. versus the southern U.S. So that includes the Corn Belt, also includes areas such as the Northern Plains, as well as other areas of the middle latitude ag belts here in the Northern Hemisphere. With this, we are seeing at least the increase in heat risk as we look out through the final 2 weeks of the month, which can climatologically, that's when normals reach their peak. And this year, with corn being significantly delayed, that's also a concern with the timing here. So that corn pollination will extend into the early part of August as well. In fact, the first 2 weeks. But with this increase in the heat risk during this latter part of July and even potentially into early August, and that coincides with the core of corn pollination this year. So certainly something that so the risk is much higher here, something to keep a close eye on here as we move forward.
Let's turn your attention to Europe. They had some heat. Is there a consequence of that, and will they have returning heat?
Yeah, we saw that heat back about a week and a half ago. It was about 4 or 5 days of pretty impressive temperatures across Europe, in fact, record-setting in areas of like France and Germany. That has since come to an end, and over the next 13, 14 days or so, no heat is expected either in Europe or the Black Sea Corn Belt. The earlier heat likely came too early for it to negatively impact corn, but we've heard reports that for winter wheat, certainly enough to stress the crop and at least lower yield potential there before the crop gets harvested. What we're watching here longer term is that there are indications of heat building back into Europe and potentially the Black Sea region coming up starting right around 2 weeks from now or shortly thereafter. Beginning to see some hints in computer model guidance of that. And from a northern hemisphere standpoint, just starting to see more, again, signals for northern-based ridging. So, again, with the corn crop in Western Europe as well as the Black Sea starting to go through corn pollination coming up during the middle to end of this month, that increase in heat stress is also something to keep an eye on here. And that risk is increasing going forward.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
And of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. Do listen to us online on demand anytime you'd like. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. You can find us as a podcast as well. Look for us in iTunes, the Google Play Store. You can also find us on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and, of course, the NPR One app. It all comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world and University of Illinois Extension. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.